Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money.
It's time for Money Plays. Brought to you in partnership with Sports Map Elite. Now get ready to take down the best money plays of the day.
All right, joining us on the HRMP guest line, he's the co-founder of Bet Predators, sports handicapper with Sports Map Elite. What's up, buddy? Chris Dell. What's up, Chris?
What's going on, Patrick? How you doing tonight?
I'm doing better now that the Astros are winning. Hopefully they will not step all over it in the ninth inning. But Astros are winning. This is good. Rockets had a nice draft. That is good. Arch Manning's coming to Texas. This is good. So, you know, I'm feeling all right, man. I'm feeling all right.
You're having yourself a nice little Friday over there.
Your thoughts, NBA draft, winners, losers, anybody that you thought had a really good draft, anybody you thought had a poopy draft?
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned it first, your hometown Houston Rockets. I thought they absolutely smashed it out of the park, man. They took three of the guys that I had in terms of first-round projected picks on my big board. I had actually Tari Eason as a top-10 prospect, so I love the pickup there. I think he fits in perfectly with the offensive-minded shooters and Jalen Green, Kevin Porter, et cetera. Eason, he's the modern-day, you know, rangy type of 3-and-D guy that you want. I think his upside is just massive on that team. You know, similar size and athleticism to Jabari Smith. And obviously for me, I tweeted a lot during the draft and leading up to the draft. I'm a lifelong Orlando Magic fan. So for me, I was happy with either Jabari Smith or Paolo Banchero. So I think both of our teams came out pretty good with getting each of those guys there. In my opinion, I think Smith has the higher ceiling in terms of the prospect and the project, but the Rockets have time to build up to that point. And I think he fits in great as the 2-3 combo on the wing with a Jalen Green there. So I'm really excited to see what Jabari Smith can do. Really excited for the Magic as well on the flip side, getting Banchero. I mean, this guy grew up essentially as a point guard, morphed into a 6'10" body. As a freshman in Duke, in that system which sometimes limits superstars statistically, Banchero put up amazing numbers against elite competition. I think he's absolutely the most NBA-rated guy to step in and be a contributor from day one. So as betting-wise, I love Banchero, Rookie of the Year. You can get him at plus 350 at Caesars Sportsbook right now, pretty much plus 300 across the board in different markets. And even Jabari Smith, I think that's a solid bet, where if you bet both those guys to win Rookie of the Year right now, I mean, these guys could come out and put up big numbers in a hurry. And if you're betting them both, if you shop around, you can essentially get that bet as a pick'em plus 175 if either one of those guys win. I'd really be surprised to see another guy step in there, because I believe the drop-off in terms of that tier one was Banchero and Smith after that. And they had tons of opportunities on teams that are growing and don't have pressure to win right now. So I love those guys for Rookie of the Year at plus 300 or better. And I think the Rockets, in my opinion, are the number one team to come out of the draft, getting both Jabari Smith, Tari Eason, and also an underrated point guard, Ty Washington from Kentucky as well.
What did you think of Detroit landing Ivy?
Well, they kind of landed into it, right? I think they came into this draft, it didn't seem like they were going to trade up for the number four pick. They were going to take the best available there. I would have hoped that if the Kings actually would have taken Ivy, I would have wanted the Pistons to step in and get a Benedict Mathurin, because Benedict Mathurin I had in my top five, way over Chet Holmgren, way over Keegan Murray. But it's a great pick. And the reason why I'm not as high on Ivy for Rookie of the Year is because you have already a ball-dominant type of scorer and playmaker in Cade Cunningham, and obviously Ivy stepping in as the point guard there. You know, the one thing that I love Ivy's athleticism. I had him as a top five talent in this draft, but one thing that I am a little bit concerned about is team's game planning against him. If you look at all his tape, I watched probably at least over an hour of his tape just in the last few days alone. I don't know if I've seen one single play where he actually finishes with his left hand. So I think that's something, it seems simple, something he absolutely needs to work on in order to be a contributor at a high level there. But I love the pickup for the Pistons. They have a bright future as well with Ivy and Cunningham. I think Cunningham takes away some of the ceiling statistically for Ivy, where I probably wouldn't bet Ivy, at least right now, for the Rookie of the Year market. But I love the pickup for them. And then getting a good center, Jalen Duren, I think 13 was a little bit high for him. But, you know, you kind of lock that down, solid pick. could be a solid contributor right away from them. The one pick that I really like the most, I don't want to get too into the weeds on this, Patrick, but Gabriel Procida, forward from Italy with the Pistons. He got traded via the Portland Trailblazers. He was in my top 15 in terms of my own personal big board rankings. I had him right next to Chet Holmgren and Nikola Jovic from Serbia. I think three of those guys have very similar profiles. This guy, 3 and D, can knock down the three better than almost anyone in the draft. So I really like the Pistons from top to bottom in terms of what they did in the draft last night.
Who did you think in the draft, because I know you have your big board and following, you know, where guys are, you know, the value on where guys are getting drafted. Who did you have as, I guess, the best value guy who fell the furthest and should have been higher? Did you have somebody that you thought was the worst value guy who got drafted much higher than you thought he'd go?
We all knew Chet Holmgren was going to be a top three pick, but I had him outside my top 15. I mean, you look at Chet Holmgren, he went to Gonzaga, you know, mainstream media type of school. He's going to get a lot of buzz with his name and with his hype, but you tell me when is the last time in the NBA ever have we seen a prospect come in at 7 feet tall or higher that weighs less than 200 pounds and have an impact? I can't remember it, Patrick. Maybe you can jog my memory, but in my opinion, you look at the build of Chet Holmgren athletically, you know, he's got to put on at minimum 30 to 40 pounds even to be a contributing role player, in my opinion, in this league. And I don't know if looking at his frame, he's going to be able to do that. I think even to just be a consistent role player, he's going to need to put on probably about 60 pounds, get close to that 250 marker, especially if he wants to contribute on the defensive end. A lot of people talk about the block shots that he had in college. And I get that the advanced metrics say that he's a really good player. And I'm not saying he can't be a good player, but the fact is that he did that in a watered-down conference that Gonzaga plays in. Didn't necessarily play his best against the best competition when Gonzaga did have those tough opponents. We saw Bancaro bully him down low on numerous occasions when Duke and Gonzaga played each other. So I think Holmgren, in my opinion, I think that Bancaro and Smith, based off everything I've seen and analyzed, those two, within a couple of years, are going to be burgeoning all-stars in this league. I believe Chet Holmgren is going to set the Thunder back another 2 to 3 years because they're going to need to go back to the well and take another guy in the top five. I just don't think Holmgren's it, in my opinion. He was a fringe borderline lottery pick, but because of the school he went to, because it is height, everyone gets fascinated by the name and the mainstream media school, the Darlings and Gonzaga. I think that's the most overrated draft pick we've seen in a long time.
Chris Dell, Sports Map Elite, Bet Predators with us on the HRMP guest line. Early values for Rookie of the Year. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I said it there. I think it's Bancaro and Jabari, and I think there's a huge drop-off after that, not just based on the talent, because in my opinion, there was a huge drop-off talent-wise after those two guys in the draft. You're talking about 3-and-D guys, you know, big-size wings, you know, 6'8", 6'9", 6'10", for Paolo, that can come in and do everything right away. They can hit the long-range three. They can create on their own off the dribble, and they have the athleticism to finish at the rim. I think that Paolo's a little more refined there, so I really like the value of both of them at plus 300 or better. Again, you can bet both of them, and essentially you're covered and basically coming out plus 175 if you bet them both around plus 350, which you can get Paolo at plus 350 on Caesars. You can get Jabari plus 350, plus 400 in certain markets. So I really like that bet right there. Just go into those two guys and then maybe adding a third option as the season goes along if we see opportunities begin to open up there. But you talk about two teams in Orlando and Houston, there's no pressure to win now. If these two teams win 30 games each next season with these guys staying healthy and showing improvement, that's going to be considered a success there organizationally. So I believe Bancaro and Smith are set up to put up big numbers for teams and really be in that top two consideration for the running for Rookie of the Year.
Now, Chris, we're maybe 5 weeks to the start of training camp, and people starting to get ramped up for football. Over under, like win total lines coming out. Do you have any, lines that you like getting into the NFL, over under win totals, things like that?
Yeah, there's a few things that I like. One market, you know me for playing player props when it comes to NBA, NFL. One market that I think there's a ton of opportunity to attack, where sometimes you get a lot of stale lines that hang around for quite a while, is the NFL season-long player prop market. And one player prop that I like and I bet already is Aaron Jones, running back for the Green Bay Packers. I bet him over his receptions and over his receiving yards. I mean, it's pretty simple here. Like, obviously, he had to deal with a lot of competition before last year, from touches from Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams left last year. We saw Aaron Jones have a really high ceiling in the receiving game when called upon. However, they had Devontae Adams, who's going to command targets at an elite level. Now you see the departure of Devontae Adams. The year before that, the departure of Jamal Williams to Detroit. Aaron Jones could be the de facto 1A, 1B wide receiver in that offense. And we've seen comments from the coaching staff, Aaron Rodgers himself, back that up. So Aaron Jones, I really like him to play a role in the passing game. And what I like about this even more is the fact that you look at his counterpart in the backfield, A.J. Dillon. Like, he's an early down grinder, big bruising type of back, played fullback in college as well just a couple years ago at Boston College. He's going to get those early down carries, maybe even some of the goal line work as well. But when it comes to third downs, when it comes to Aaron Rodgers needing someone he can trust, he probably trusts Aaron Jones more than any of his wide receivers at this point in the preseason. And I don't think anything's going to change when it comes to the regular season for the Packers. So I really like the value there, playing over on receptions and receiving yards for Aaron Jones.
Now, that's a slick pick because, you know, without having Adams, who, you know, was a target monster, like, they've got to split that up somewhere. I mean, they don't have somebody to really replace all those targets, and I can't imagine they're going to say, hey, Aaron, we're not going to throw the football. So somebody's got to catch the ball. And, you know, Aaron Jones is one of those guys who is, under the radar productive. I don't think people realize how good he is. I don't think people realize how much yardage he cranks out and, you know, and everything that he does for that team. I think you're probably going to get a better glimpse of it this year. Now, Chris, I know you are a big golf guy. Travelers Championship going on right now. What do you got live bets for the weekend? Because I know you have them. For the Travelers Championship golf this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the top of the board right now, obviously, you know, coming off Friday, we got Xander Schauffele in a clear commanding lead here at 14 under par. But I think I want to look at some value in terms of guys beneath him on the board there that you get some pretty decent numbers. I mean, there's a ton of guys sitting at -7, -8, -9. And just in one day, those odds can shift in a major way. So I like to look down the board in terms of adding guys to my card. Typically, I'm not even betting much in golf until after round one. I really bet my heaviest from round three going into round four. But when you look at a few of the guys on the board who are top the leaderboard there, I think you look at guys who have maybe been doing really well in terms of areas around the green, chipping-wise, strokes gained approach, strokes gained off the tee, who have struggled to putt the ball but are still in contention. Guys like Martin Laird, Charles Howell III, Webb Simpson even, those are guys to me that are striking in my model because they've had a little bit of struggle putting the ball in rounds one and rounds two, but they're doing really well across the board. So all it takes for them is one hot putting day in order to put themselves back in contention. Even a long shot guy down the board that you could potentially bet at plus money for a top 20 type of finish, tied for top 20 right now, a guy like Brendan Steele, -6 under par. Those are some of the guys that I'm looking at specifically right now in terms of who are doing really well with their strokes gained approach, off the tee game, around the green game. The putting, a little more fluky from day to day. Guys can go hot and cold in a second. So those are some of the guys I'm looking at right now to make a strong finish for the rest of the weekend. A
lot of money plays there for my man Chris Dell, Sports Map Elite, Bet Predators. Chris, let me ask you more of an opinion type of thing here. I'm of the opinion that instead of trying to cause division and split the golf world up, the PGA as the existing organization that can only lose, right? They can only lose players. They're not going to gain players. They already had everybody. That to me, it's in their best interest to, instead of exclude players who want to play on the LIV Tour, to just, okay, you want to go play there and then play here other tournaments because they're going to play a limited schedule over there. I wouldn't ostracize them. You want to go chase the money, go chase the money. You come here, you play here. You know, you get into the whole, the FedEx Championship, and you got to get wins on the tour in order to get more points or whatnot. Well, they're going to have less opportunity to do that because they're not going to be playing all the tour events. But at least you get all the best golfers and all the big names, because big names draw eyes to TV. They all play your biggest tournaments. It's, you know, pushing them to go get more sponsors and more tournaments and get more money up there. Embrace the competition instead of, you know, acting like butthurt babies and trying to throw everybody out. Because you throw everybody out, you lose those names. These are guys that, whether you think that they're still currently great golfers or not, they bring eyes to the television set. They bring people to the event. You want to play? I would, if I were the PGA, I'd be like, you want to play there, play there. You want to come back and play here, play here. We're not going to penalize you for playing both sides of the fence. Should they go that direction, or do you think that they're right to be like, all right, if you play over there, you're dead to us?
Yeah, it's a tough one, man. There's not really a precedent for this in golf, but I agree with you in the fact that, you know, golf's already a sport that there's a lot of popularity in terms of it being more of a popular sport just for sports bettors like us. And you want to include the best names possible when it comes to that, especially when you look at the Live Tour and what they're doing. It's really hard for bettors to get, yeah, I would say, like, respectable action down just because, like, there is none of the data that we talked about. Like, every time that you and I talk golf, I'm talking about the strokes gained data, the shot length data that the PGA has from hole to hole in a given tournament, and they don't even have it for all the tournaments in a given year. Liv doesn't have anything like that right now. So it's a real struggle, DFS players, sports bettors, to really get down quality action there. So I think the PGA easily has a leg up in terms of what Liv is doing, despite the names there. These guys are going to get some fat paychecks, and then they're going to come back to whoever has the best offer at the end of the day, or however long the Liv Tour winds up going on for. So I'm like you, man. Like, I try to stay out of the controversy. I'm here as a sports bettor and as a sports fan. I want to be entertained. I want to be able to watch and have some fun watching and also have some fun betting too. And the reality is you can't really do much in terms of watching and having a good quality TV or streaming experience with Liv or a betting experience with them either. And the PGA has already won that battle. I don't see the Liv coming close to that anytime soon. So I think PGA is better off doing what they do best, and they already have a superior experience when it comes to just casual sports fans and sports bettors alike. So I think they're good. I think they're good. And the more positive vibes they put out and kind of just let themselves win over the course of the long term, I think it'll serve them better, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's what I think. Like, if you're the PGA, every time somebody leaves, oh, it's a negative. You know, and if you remove that negative from the equation of, all right, you can go play over there, but you're still welcome over here. We're not going to penalize you. Go chase your money, do your thing, whatever. We don't care. You eliminate the, quote, the negative press and the backbiting and the fighting and all that. You just take it out of the equation.
It's like the simple things we learned growing up that, you know, you don't want to stoop down to someone's level. And if you're going to put yourselves on the level of the Live Tour and get upset every time they take a golfer away from you or have them join for a tournament or two, then I think that's exactly what the PGA is doing. I don't think it serves them well. I don't think it's a bad look for them. I don't think they need to do it. I think the PGA is a quality tour viewing experience for sports fans and sports bettors. So I agree with you there. I don't really know what the PGA has to gain by doing it. They're just giving more attention to the Live Tour. And I think that with their experience over time, that they'll realize that too and clean some of it up. So we want to see the best golfers. We want to have the best data. Maybe it's for both tours for a little bit, or maybe in the next year or two, it's just going to be the PGA again. I think that's what it's going to look like.
Chris Dell, Bet Predator Sports, Math Elite. Follow him on Twitter at Mad Journalist, Mad with two Ds. Mad Journalist, Chris, always appreciate your time, brother. We will talk soon.
Likewise, Patrick. Next time I got the World Cup, that's for you too, man. Have a good weekend.
Here we go. World Cup coming up. Gonna have to get AC to stick around on next time we have Chris on, because you know AC's all about the World Cup. He's Chris Dell, Bet Predators, and Sports Map Elite with us on the HRMP guest line on Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Hey, a minute here for Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, Physical Therapy. Now, I've been going to see Dr. JJ now for about 6 months. I've been putting off neck surgery for over 10 years. I would go through weeks where I couldn't turn my head at all. I'd go through weeks where I couldn't lift my left arm over my shoulder. I would go a week at a time with my left arm just going numb. And, you know, I'd think I'm holding something. Next thing I know, I'm not holding it. I went to go see Dr. JJ, and the first thing, you know, we just talked, and I went through all the different issues that I'd had and the different prognoses that I'd been given and the diagnoses that I'd been given and different kinds of doctors that I'd talked to and what they'd said. And she started working on trying to find whatever those trigger points were in my neck and in my shoulder that were causing my body to lock up. And while physical therapy is not going to fix whatever disc damage that I have, what I can tell you is the pain is now gone. And I mean, the pain would be on a scale of 1 to 10, 15. I wouldn't be able to turn my head at all. Putting my head on the pillow at night was excruciating. I have no pain in my neck. I haven't said that for a decade. I have no pain in my neck. I have no issues lifting my arm over my shoulder. I don't have the numbness, and I haven't had it for months, thanks to Dr. JJ. Doing events with my kids used to be a business decision. All right, let's see how I feel today. Can I go shoot hoops? Can I go have a catch? Can I go sling some arrows? Now it's not a business decision. I can just go do it. And that, being able to do that and be more active in my kids' lives is a huge bonus for me. It's really important for me to be able to do those things. We're going kayaking later this summer, and I'm so excited to be able to do it. I haven't gone kayaking in years because I haven't been able to, and now I can. So if you deal with pain, if you deal with loss of strength or lack of range of motion or losing your balance, and stop dealing with all of it. Do something about it. Go see Dr. JJ. She's got a brand new facility up in North Houston. Give her a call, 346-386-6683, 346-386-6683. GetPhysicalRx.com, GetPhysicalRx.com. JV is through seven. He is done. Four hits, one run, one walk, three punch-outs. He leaves on the long side of a 3-1 game, now in the top of the eighth. The Astros bullpen now will have to hold this lead, unlike yesterday. They will have to hold this lead. And, you know, I thought last night's game, it was apparent very early that Presley didn't have it. Presley did not have command at all. Wasn't sharp. Breaking pitches were not sharp. Walks two guys, gives up a three-run home with a freaking Aaron Hicks. But that they didn't have anybody ready to come in at that point. When you see your closer comes in, walks the first two guys, and is not looking sharp at all, you probably want to have somebody up and ready. Well, they didn't. And the next two guys get on. One gets erased on a court stealing that the Astros actually got, looked like they got kind of fortunate on that call. But it took five batters to get him out of there when he clearly had nothing. And I put some of this on Presley because you know what? If you're in the bullpen warming up and you know you have nothing, probably a good idea to say something. If you're the bullpen coach and you see he's got nothing, maybe you should say something. He came in, he was awful. And this coming right after he had basically had his best outing of the year, probably against the Mets. And his inability to pitch on back-to-back days, you know, having the injury early on, and I don't know how, you know, if he's, you know, still sore on back-to-back or whatnot. But while I still think Press is a really good pitcher, I am questioning how healthy he is. Because if he can't pitch at all on a back-to-back night, you know, maybe you're not totally healthy. Maybe that knee's barking a little bit. And it further exacerbates the fact they need another power arm for the back of the pen. Now, Neris has been very good. Montero has been good. And outside of yesterday, you know, Ryan Stanek been pretty good. Not entirely sure where Ryan Stanek's throwing breaking balls when he's throwing 100 miles an hour. But the idea of, as we get closer to the deadline, another back-of-the-pen type arm, I think it's fair to question how durable Presley's going to be the rest of the year and then into the postseason. I don't think it's a matter of, like I said, I still think he's a good pitcher. I think he's a really good pitcher. But you could tell last night his breaking ball did not have the bite to it. And while his velocity on the fastball is back up to 95, still have to have the command of it. And his best pitch is the breaking ball. When it doesn't have that real sharp downward bite, it's not as effective. And if that means he can't pitch back-to-back nights, or every now and then you got to give him a couple of days off, okay. But then you've got to add another big arm to the back of the pen. Last night's game felt like a kick in the junk. In reality, it's just one game. And it doesn't mean any more in the standings than any other game that you lose. And if they come back tonight, they hold on to this game, and they win the very next day, it's like, whatever. And the Astros, in this run since 2015, in this run, they have proven to be a resilient team. Despite the fact that, the lineup has changed and the rotation has greatly changed and the bullpen has greatly changed year to year, they always seem to be a resilient team. Bunch. So while it was a vomit-inducing loss, it didn't need a hangover. Just go out and get us a victory tonight. Don't have another meltdown. Maybe work in another run here. As Michael Brantley on second base, after a wild pitch, allowed him to advance to second. Nobody out. Let's work another run in here. Create a little breathing room. And take down the South Bronx Slumlords. All right, coming up next, Alekhine Bajani covers the Rockets for The Athletic. He joins us to talk about their draft night next.
ESPN 97.5. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Join us right now on the HR&B guest line. He covers the Houston Rockets for The Athletic. Co-host of the Rockets Film Room, Locked On Rockets Film Room. He is our buddy, Alekhine Bajani. What's up, Alekhine? How are you, brother?
Hey, Patrick. Happy late birthday, by the way.
Ah, thank you, man. Appreciate that. I'm old. Getting older each and every time, man.
Nah, you're still young, man. You're doing radio. You're still young.
Yeah, all in my mind. Hey, I thought the Rockets had a second straight terrific draft. Rafael Stone making us forget whoever that guy was before who had the Audi Q5. Don't remember his name. Rhymed with like Bori or something. I don't know, something like that. But first of all, your reaction when you realized Jabari Smith was going to fall into the Rockets' lap at 3.
I'm like everybody else in the world. I was pretty confused because the consensus number one and just how everything was going, mocks, everything, seemed like it's going to be Jabari going number one. So I was, throughout the day, I was starting to look at more Paulo clips, kind of getting my work ready for that. And all of a sudden, an hour before the draft, Woj puts out that tweet, and everybody's like, wait, what's going on here? And it's interesting because Rafael Stone talked about it last night. He's like, yeah, everybody thinks something's going to happen, but, in actuality, NBA teams operate differently than what the rest of the world thinks. And I thought that was a really good point that he brought up. But, just to answer your question, yeah, I was pretty surprised that it was not Paolo Banchero and it was indeed Jabari Smith. you know, when I look back at the draft now, I said this throughout the process too, I thought Jabari Smith was the best fit for this team and how they want to play, and just Rafael Stone's vision these last two or three drafts that he's been a part of. I do think, though, Paolo was the best player, just from my personal perspective. I think Jabari's the best fit, and the best part of bringing Jabari, and he's so talented, that now whenever, you know, presumably they're not going to be that great next season, going back into the lottery, you can pick up another great talent, and that does not also doesn't have to be about fit, because Jabari and Jalen Bowe just play so well with anybody they'd be paired with.
Now, the Rockets had three first-round picks, essentially, and at 17, they take Tari Eason of LSU. He's kind of like a, I don't want to call him a hybrid, but he kind of looks like a hybrid. He's 6'8", but, you know, he can handle the ball. He can get to the rim. You know, defensive type of guy. Leader on the court for LSU. What do you tell us about Tari Eason? What made the Rockets real interested in him? And you know, what kind of fit is he for this team?
In back-to-back drafts, Rafael Stone essentially got the player he thought was the best defensive player in that draft last year. It was Usman Garuba, somebody who the Rockets are very excited about going to his second season, and now Tari Eason as well. And so when you look at it from what's going on right now, I think they're pretty ecstatic. Just wanted to give you more insight. You mentioned some of his, you know, just some of what makes Tari Eason. He's 6'8", 7'2" wingspan. He can guard all five positions. He was 90th percentile in the country in transition. Now, why is that important? He reminds me a lot of Josh Christopher in that sense. And the way the Rockets will be successful next season is whenever you play in the break. You're going to have Josh, who likes to push the ball up the middle and get to the hole. Tari's the same way. He likes to push the ball up the floor, get to the middle. Jalen loves to play those rails. And if we're doing a visual exercise for those listening on the radio, rail is like the sideline of the NBA. So Jalen loves to attack the sidelines. Jabari's also the same way. He likes to attack the sidelines because he's one of the most efficient catch-and-shoot and corner three-point shooters, not only in the country, but just for his size. He's probably the best big shooting big in the country out of college. So you put all those things together, and the way the Rockets want to play, which is one and done, that is a terrific combination. And all four of those guys, and including Jalen Green, who's made strides defensively, are all going to be capable plus defenders. That bodes well for a Rockets team that really wants to improve exponentially defensively this season.
Now, the Rockets had essentially Dallas's pick at 26 from the Christian Wood deal. Dallas takes Wendell Moore Jr., small forward from Duke. The Rockets then flip him to the Grizz for the 29th pick and a pair of seconds. Before they made their pick at 29, when you saw they flipped 26 and Wendell Moore for a pair of seconds, what was your initial reaction?
I figured they would probably wanted to, the guy they wanted would come down. And I think Ty was somebody they had very high up in the draft. And when you look at Ty, he's somebody who, in my opinion, was a big, big get for the Rockets. Not because he's talented. I mean, all three of these guys are talented. And Rafael Stone used the word excited probably infinite number of times today during his press conference this afternoon, and also last night at midnight after the draft. But Ty is somebody that can be a, how should I say this? Somebody besides Kevin Porter Jr. who you can rely on as potentially a future point guard in this league. As of right now, the only point guard prospect the Rockets have, let's be honest, is Kevin Porter Jr. And given that he's going into a season where an option may be picked up, we'll see, going into a season where Dacian Nix, somebody the Rockets feel like has first-round talent, is going to get more opportunities. You bring in a guy like Ty Washington, who the Rockets are very familiar with, especially Rafael Stone. They go back a long time. Ty actually played for James Harden's AAU team, so the Rockets are very familiar with him as well, just from the scouting department staff-wise. And I think Ty just gives you a good pure point guard. He had the best assist-to-turnover ratio in the SEC, one of the best in the country. He's just a good, solid point guard who knows how to get the ball in his playmaker's hands. And I think with the Rockets team, it's going to have a lot of the great shooting with Jabari, with Jalen. You have LP who can also pass the ball. That is a great asset to have as potentially somebody who you can develop to be a starting point guard in the future.
You know, Alec, as we look at, you know, the guys who the Rockets drafted this year and really the guys who they drafted last year,
they've got a lot of guys who can fly up and down the court. Is that ultimately where you see the Rockets going? You see them playing, being a team that pays just lightning fast up and down the court.
Yeah, I think the way the Rockets are going to be successful is, and especially the way they want to play with five out, they want to push the ball up the court. When you push the ball up the court, you can create an advantage. And from there, what Steven Silas wants to play is having a big outside, forcing a switch, forcing a mismatch. Then you can put the ball in your ball handler's hands, who can create a further mismatch by drawing two on the ball. When you watch the NBA, when you watch the finals, this past recent finals, when Steph Curry had the ball, he got into the paint. What happened after? We had two guys on him that opened up all of these shots for his teammates. I think that's the same type of offense that Steven Silas wants to play. He wants to create a situation on the perimeter when a guy can get through and put two defenders on the ball and create a mismatch. And now you have Jabari who can shoot, Jalen who's great, Kevin Porter Jr. who's a really good catch and shoot player. You have LP whose shot looks good, and hopefully he takes the next step with the three-point shooting. So you're putting a good shooting team around your key guys, and you're hoping that by running and running, you can play well. But that type of offense does not work, Patrick, if they're not good defensively. And that was obvious. That was an obvious key emphasis for Rafael Stone in the draft. You get possibly the best switch defender in the NCAA in Jabari Smith, somebody who spent more than 50% of his time guarding players who were 6'6 and shorter. Just for our listeners out there, Jabari Smith is 6'10. You have a 6'10 guy guarding guards most of the time on possession. That's pretty incredible. You got Tari Eason, who, as we said earlier, is regarded as probably the best defender in the draft from the Rockets' perspective. You have Ty Washington, who's also a good point of attack defender, someone the Rockets struggle kind of navigating around screens, having a guard do that. So all in all, I think the Rockets improve great defensively, but defense is what's going to allow them to go into the offense they want to play.
Alec Abajani covers the Rockets for The Athletic with us on the HRMP guest line. Alec, do you believe Eric Gordon is a Rocket by the time the season starts?
I thought he would get deal last night. I put out a report that, you know, the Rockets and Sixers had been talking. They were looking for a 13. I was pretty confident that something may have or could have happened last night. Now, it's past the draft. Not to say it won't happen, but I would say it's a very good possibility that he is on the roster. And with a team that's so young and a team that's lacking veterans, I mean, besides Eric Gordon, you have a very, very young team. Like, you have to go down to David Nwaba and maybe KJ Martin, who's about to be a third-year player. I mean, it's a very young team. I think Eric Gordon here stabilizes the team, a guy who leads by example, who's actually very close to some of your key players on the team. And, you know, Jabari Smith reminds me a lot of Eric Gordon in terms of they get the job done. They're all about business and putting in the work. And I have a lot of really good things to say about Eric. I think he'll be a great help for this team. So I think it's a good thing if he stays. We'll see. To answer your question, I'm pretty confident he'll stick around.
Christian Wood and Şengün didn't have a whole lot of success on the court together. Do you expect that to be better when we're looking at Şengün and Jabari Smith?
I think that's really interesting. You know, somebody asked Rafael Stone this question, and he said, yeah, you know, of course they're going to play well. Well, what else is he going to say? But when we're looking at it from just both of those guys playing together, this allows Şengün to have the ball in his hands. He's such a great and willing passer, and Jabari is a guy who you wouldn't think about it, but I'm not making this comparison as a player. I'm just making a comparison in terms of how we can utilize him. It's just kind of having it come off the screens. Right? You have him come off the screens. You have him come off all these down screens, actions, whatever. He's moving without the ball. You have a big who can knock down shots that's catch and shoot above 40% from three while moving around. That is a weapon if you're an NBA offense. And I think having LP and him run some actions where maybe LP is on one side and you have Jabari coming on a screen. I mean, there's so many different options you can do. And I think that's the most important key. I just said Jabari just needs to have the ball in his hands. He is great with the ball in his hands. He can create his own shot, especially in the mid-range. But I think they will play really, really well off each other. And most importantly, Patrick, defensively, you have Jabari who's going to play more like a four, a power forward, high big wing defensively, and which allows LP to play more of that five. But Jabari is one of the best defenders. He's going to be a potentially all-NBA defensive guy in his career. You put him next to LP, that mitigates a lot of the problems that the Rockets could foresee LP having as he continues to grow in his body and grows as a player offensively and defensively. And so I just think that they're a match made perfectly. Like I said, when we first started this interview, you know, you could not have asked for a better fit for the Rockets between all three top three prospects.
I'll have one more for you. You know, if the Rockets do ultimately buy out John Wall, will they stretch him or will they take the whole hit this year? I feel like even though it'll hurt to dump $47 million on a guy who's not going to play this year, it would be better for them to just eat the money this year than stretch it. What do you think they'll do?
That's a great question. You know, they really value their 2023 summer cap space. And just from that perspective, Patrick, I think that they're, you know, that does become an option, which I very much think is an option at this point for John Wall. I think they'll eat the contract and eat the amount this for the season, so they can have as much flexibility as they can heading into 2023. It all depends on how they even envision the free agent market and how they envision in terms of giving out contract extensions. But if you were asking me today, I think they eat the money for just the season and not spread it out.
He's Alec Ambajani, covers the Rockets for The Athletic, co-host of the Rockets Film Room, Locked On Rockets Film Room. Follow him on Twitter at Rockets_insider. Alec, I really appreciate you taking some time with us tonight, brother. We will catch up again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Patrick. Always fun.
All right, Alec Ambajani of The Athletic, covering the Rockets, with us here on Late Hits.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, and by Dr. Christo Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Hey, we're for Dr. Ben Salento, Texas Sinus and Snoring. I went to go see Dr. Ben 3 years ago. Had been suffering from sinus infections for a long time, basically every other month, for ever. Like over 20 years. John Carlos Stanton, sit your ass down! Now, let me do this over. Take a minute for my good friend, Dr. Ben Salento, Texas Sinus and Snoring. Went to go see him 3 years ago because I've been dealing with sinus infections pretty much every other month for over 20 years. Every doctor I'd ever been to never cared to find out why I kept getting them, just kept having me live on antibiotics. Dr. Ben wanted to know why. I went up to go see him. He's got a state-of-the-art facility in North Houston. We went all of three doors down the hall, did a CT scan right there. Didn't have to get a referral. Didn't have to go somewhere else. Didn't have to talk to another doctor. They did it right there. It took 5 minutes. 10 minutes later, Dr. Ben's got the results up on the wall, putting a plan of action together in. And a month later, I had a procedure. Removed staph infection from my sinuses. No wonder the antibiotics weren't working. I had staph infection. None of these other doctors bothered to find out what it was. That staph infection did a ton of damage to my sinuses. So they did a balloon sinuplasty to fix all the damaged tissue in my sinuses, open up my airways, allow me to breathe better. And they did a septoplasty because it turned out I had a deviated septum and didn't even know that. In the 3 years since, I have not had a single sinus infection. I cannot remember a time where I've ever gone 3 years without a sinus infection. And it's thanks to Dr. Ben. Also, as a result of opening up my airways, I don't snore anymore. Amazing what happens when you can breathe. Dr. Ben had me download this app called Snore Lab. It listens to you while you sleep. I don't snore anymore. I got rid of two problems, all thanks to Dr. Ben. So if you have sinus issues, sinus pain, frequent sinus infections, stop living with it. If you snore really badly and you don't want to anymore, you don't have to. All you have to do is give Dr. Ben Salento a call, have a consultation, 346-413-9313, 346-413-9313. Go to TexasSinusAndSnoring.com, TexasSinusAndSnoring.com. Tell them I sent you by. Most major medical accepted. Bottom of the eight. Two on. Two out. Spin rate's got two strikes on Josh. Ring his ass up. Sit down, biatch. win rate. Punch out on Giancarlo. Punch out on Josh Donaldson. We're going to the top of the ninth up 3-1. And Donaldson's pissy, but that is the exact same play, exact same swing Jose Altuve got rung up on earlier in the game. Exact same one. Sit down, biatch. I only need one more. This time we need to not fall apart in the ninth. They said, who's warming up? Is it Montero?
They showed Seth Martinez warming up. I had the same exact reaction.
That's ballsy.
I don't know if he was warming up just for Maton to come in the middle of the eighth, maybe, because Maton did get into a little bit of trouble there, but I don't know if he's closing or not.
Well, last man standing, maybe? You know, Presley obviously not available today. And I don't know if Ryan Stanek's available today. Montero's pitched a little bit. It might be that they're low on a whole bunch of available arms. Maybe they want to give the Yankees a look at somebody they haven't seen yet. You know, what do you got?
McTaggart said that Seth Martinez and Rafael Montero are throwing in the bullpen.
All right, I would expect Montero's going to come in for the ninth. So, Presley and Stanek couldn't get the job done last night. Montero's going to get the shot tonight. Astros going to try to put some more on the board here, up 3-1. Look, I thought the Rockets had a great draft. I'm excited about the Rockets. If you're not excited about the Rockets, you probably don't like basketball. And if you don't like basketball, you're probably a bad person. You like cats, you know. If you like cats and not dogs, you're a bad person. If you wear flip-flops in public and you're a dude, bad person. You put mustard on hamburgers, bad person. What are some things for you, Sean, that tell you somebody's a bad person? To me, if my dog doesn't like you, you're a bad person.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
If dogs don't like you, you're a bad person.
The problem I had was with my dearly departed dog. She was a little bit racist. I will say that. She wasn't too keen on the darker skinned folk.
I will tell you this.
So for me, that's not a good one because then I become racist.
Well, no,
but
let me tell you, because dogs get used to their surroundings. What you see is, okay, like we're white. The dog's around white people all the time. When non-white people come to the door, the dog the reverse happens also. So dogs are just, if it's outside their norm, they get their back up. That's just how they are. It's not that they can. I mean, dogs really can't see in color anyway. It's kind of gray tones. True. They don't really see in color. It's the, they don't, you're not normal. You're not supposed to be here. For example, my last dog, if you wore a uniform, any kind of uniform, mailman, UPS, guy who comes to, you know, check the, all right, in New York, we had oil burners because most houses still had oil heat and not gas heat. So the guy from the oil company who'd come and service the burner every year wears a uniform. Didn't matter, white, black, brown, yellow, pink, purple, polka dots. If you wore a uniform, my dog wanted your jugular. And that's just how they were. But yeah, if my dog doesn't like you, you're a bad person. I think if you eat traditional size pizza with a fork and knife, you're a bad person.
If you don't like wings, bad person.
Yeah, if you don't like wings, you're a bad person. If you eat blue cheese, bad person.
Get him out of here.
All right, Astros looking to hold on to this one tonight. Does it for us for the weekend. Hope everybody has a great weekend. And coming up next, we got the two-time Hall of Famer, We got the boat, Brad Gilmore, the two-time Hall of Famer, Booker T. At the Hall of Fame. It's coming up next here on ESPN 97.5. Have a great weekend. H-Town!
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.